It's always fascinating to me when people just walk into the studio. We're in a part of Tijuana called Zona Norte.
Yeah.
Zona Norte is, it's in the morning, so it's not that spicy.
Yeah.
But at night, man.
Yeah.
Like that's like a thriller video around here with all the zombies coming out. We're right on the border. And it's always like, to me, it's always like, it's a spicy place. The reason why we have the podcast out here, it's kind of filter in a way. You know, if you're not willing to make it down to TJ, you know.
Like, are you really the business?
Yeah.
Are you really about the business?
You're about the business. You grew up right across the border.
I did.
San Diego.
Yeah, I grew up in San Diego, and we were coming down here in high school, man, even before 9/11, so it was a lot different. I mean, we'd walk across, and there'd be a guy sleeping, and we'd come back. And
you got TJ before 9/11.
Yeah.
So you got the, it was wild.
Yeah, it was party. Very porous at the San Ysidro border. We'd come down here, shoot steroids, go to the strip club, and then go back to football practice, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like totally different, man.
I mean, you could get away with some of that still. It's just different now.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole gringos coming down to party thing, they don't come down to party anymore. They come down to live here.
Yeah.
It's different now.
Yeah, is it different? That's what I was going to ask you. I remember people coming down here from San Diego State and like going back up. Is it just because it's more complicated in the crossing of the border?
So TJ is basically a giant dormitory right now.
Yeah.
People that can't afford to live in San Diego.
Yeah.
They just live in TJ.
I could totally see that. There's an interesting dynamic here, and there's an energy here that I was walking here thinking about. It's like there's a freedom here or an energy here that you don't get in San Diego. I don't know what it is. I've always felt like that. Even down Baja, there's like a, man, if you stay in your lane for the most part, you're not going to have issues for the most part. You show respect, you're going to get it here.
The small rules don't matter.
Yeah.
Or they bend here.
Yeah. And I like that.
Which is, you know,
that's the world I live in.
Like I remember having the experience of going from here till then living in California for a bit, then Kentucky, then Texas.
Oh, man.
And it was like a culture shock,
yeah,
you know?
I bet.
The small things. I mean, you know, a DUI here is, you know, $500.
Yeah.
To get out of it. If you're already caught, it's like.
Yeah. They're like, what are you doing?
Manslaughter is about 10 grand in some places, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a free for all in a lot of ways. But that's also what kind of makes it kind of dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I don't know. Like, you grew up in SD. I mean, you're saying that you would cross over here. But it seems like you didn't have a lot of supervision going on in your life. What's going on?
You know, I had a single mom. You know, my dad had his problems with drugs and alcohol in the beginning. He was a former Marine. That's what brought us out here. And we stayed. My parents had a tumultuous relationship. But I think I had a good childhood for the most part. Like, I played sports, and my mom was a teacher. So we were humble means, but, you know, I never wanted for things. So I always tell people I had a great childhood. Supportive. I know my parents loved me, that type of thing. But there was tumultuousness, which I'm sure a lot of people can understand that. But I worked, you know, it wasn't my mom giving me money. So I worked, and so I had freedom that came with that.
I hustled.
I would play sports, and I would deal some weed and work, and I always had a job. So I always just made sure I had money. And that's, as a single mom, it's tough to control a boy like that.
You were hustling weed.
Oh, yeah.
At what age?
And I got kicked out of high school for possession of marijuana. And so it was probably like 16, 17.
This fascinates me because, you know, weed now comes from San Diego down. you can find some Sinaloa with weed here, but it's like you want the California shit because it's way better.
Yeah.
Back then, you're getting some shit. What was your connect like back then?
Man, I mean, we had some hydroponic stuff, but we were also getting Mexican weed, you know, with the, you know, having to break up the seeds. We were getting the whole mixed bag, really.
Yeah, it's twigs, seeds, cockroach in there.
Yeah, but mostly we had some pretty good shit.
Same shit we grew up with here. Like, we didn't get any hydroponic anything.
Yeah.
Like, every now and then we'd get, like, a American cousin that would come down with some, like,
man.
Hey, just smoke this, and you would be like,
yeah.
What was in there?
Yep.
you say you had, like, a good relationship with both your parents, and you basically just hustling. Where does that hustle come from? Is it just...
That's a good question.
Wanting to have?
I always had this seed of ambition. This seed of... And I've really tried to identify what it was because I've had a lot of time to think, quiet time to think, which we'll get into, of where that comes from. But it was like a feeling of like not being good enough or like maybe a rooted insecurity somewhere along the lines when I was a kid or something where I just... And I think I still deal with that, where every day I feel like I have to prove myself.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think it's a multiple years of therapy.
Yeah.
Eventually led me to the place where, you know, I had some shit going on when I was a kid, and I hustled. Like, since I was 14, I moved out of the house at 14, and I was just figuring shit out, hustling. Abandonment issues, man, apparently.
I can see that. So you were down here?
Yeah. I grew up here. This is my city. Like, yeah. This is my hometown. My whole thing with money and hustling was nobody's coming to the rescue, so I better prepare for the winter.
And that's massive. I think that reality is massive for people because we all know people who come from wealthy families, man, who struggle.
Yeah.
Psychologically and have a lot of issues later because there's always that safety net, man.
Yeah.
When you know there's no safety net and you have that seed of ambition, guess what? It's all on you.
And I have this. They asked me like, hey, do you remember being depressed as a kid? It's like, no, not really.
Yeah.
Why? Because I was running.
Yeah.
Because I had time. I didn't have time to be depressed. I had to figure out next month's rent. I had to figure out how to hustle a dude for a new radiator for my car. Yeah. I had to figure out how to make some
depression's cash. A luxury.
Oh, yeah. You don't have
it
time
means you
for
got
that
time
shit.
To think about me, I.
That's when I figured out that depression on my end was directly related to inactivity.
100%.
That's
astute.
Yeah. But it was, it's a ride to get there, though.
Yeah.
So you have this hustle mentality that's pushing you through your childhood. Mm. Slinging weed, which is great, you know. It's funny now.
Yeah, it is.
It's fucking hilarious now. But back then, I know I grew up with Mexico was probably like 10, 15 years in the past. So like the whole reefer madness thing was still a thing for like in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like people were like, if you smoke weed, you might get high and never come down. Yeah. Like when you were a kid at Catholic school, they would say shit like that. Like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
And it would freak us out. But I imagine that kind of brought some negativity with it, I guess, being kicked out of school for marijuana possession.
And I ruined some opportunities for scholarships and things like that. I was a pretty good lacrosse and football player, but it was always, I didn't understand the gravity of the decisions I was making. Now, looking back, I never had a moral issue with it. And I still kind of operate like that. Like rules and laws, for the most part, for me, I don't give a fuck. I'm like operate on a moral capacity and a universal law capacity now, which took me a little bit longer to understand. And so I still don't have a major issue with it. But what those actual rules, me breaking them, it was substantial.
Authority. Fuck the police.
I have an issue with them. You know what's
that? When I was a kid, that was like a whole thing. Like I grew up with Abby here who helps us at the podcast, and these fuckers have known me since I was a kid. And I didn't like the police. I didn't like the police when I was a kid. And somehow I fucking found my way there.
The thing is, I have a lot of clients who are police officers saying, like on an individual basis, it's not that. It's the institution telling me to put my seatbelt on or some shit. It's like, what? I don't get it.
I get that aspect. Like, but as a kid growing up and going through these troubles and not realizing kind of the gravity of some of the decisions you're making and how it's... For me, again, another realization that I had like later on in life is some of my issues come with time blindness.
Whoa, that's an interesting term I've never heard before.
ADHD... Most of us probably who are in this line of work, we're some sort of spectrum.
Oh, absolutely.
People.
Yeah.
So I just didn't have any concept of like, hey, I just need to be really good at shit now and solve things now. And I didn't really kind of see the...
Yeah.
Like, I could just punch this cop right now and run.
Yeah.
And that's not going to affect anything in the future somehow. So I would make a lot of decisions based on the now because that's all I knew.
100%. I would say I agree with that, because when I look back in examination of my life, it's I lacked self-awareness on a massive scale. Like, I lacked the ability to project that time, like you said, to project into, I didn't really have a strategic plan.
Yes.
Looking back, I think some kids grow up with that. And I think that that's a big part of the nurture part, is parents have to kind of institute that plan. Like, hey man, here's the kind of the, now I'm not putting it on anybody else. I don't know if I would have listened to it, but yeah. I'm saying for my own, if I'm going to approach like my kid, I have a daughter on the way in December, but it's like, how would I communicate that message? Like, listen, I'd probably just be a little bit authoritarian on it.
That's why the Asians, man, the Asians have it down.
Oh, absolutely. Because they understand, they go, look, you're going to do this.
The future. There's structure and projection into the future. Yes. In that. And I struggle with it still. Like, I have a kid now. I'm trying to figure out that structure, not being too kind of like pushy and regimental, but at the same time, like, hey.
Understanding the trappings you had.
Yeah, you have to figure some of this stuff out. You were growing up in that environment, being around the authority. Man, I get it, man. When I was a kid, fuck the police. And also the police here in Mexico, completely different. Mm. So, like, the whole fuck the police thing comes from a different mindset.
It's a little
like,
elevated.
Fuck them. Like, they'll fucking get you.
Yeah.
You're growing up in this environment, getting in what type of trouble are you getting into?
You know what? I was pretty good. My grades are good, but I was drinking and driving pretty much anywhere. Never had any issues though. Like, I wasn't reckless. Yeah. I was always just kind of like pushing the pace. And man, I'd be pulled out of taxis here by the cops multiple times. I was down in Baja, like always getting pulled over at 3 a.m, having to pay the cops off. It was like a lot of that type of stuff.
Pay the fine here.
Yeah, pay the fine. So I was always kind of pushing the pace, but never something crazy dramatic. I did get in a pretty bad car accident right after high school where I ejected out of a lifted Tundra on a freeway. And I just went through the side windshield, it rolled it, and I just walked out of the hospital a few days later.
How did you get into that Tundra?
Oh, man, we were coming back from the river, just partying, 17 years old, and the kid was, had driven about 2 hours, and I never asked him what happened. It was too windy, or he fell asleep, or something, but he overcorrected, and we rolled. And that ruined some football because I was going to college to play football, so that just didn't set me up for good momentum going into freshman year.
Did it? So you were... Did anything happen to your head?
I mean, I smashed my head, but I got a noggin, man, like this table.
All of those hits add up, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's something I've been realizing.
The football and all that. I'm sure I got some shit going on.
But it's not even, you know, it's obviously there's cost to, like, the concussions and, like, all that shit in the end will get to you. But also, in a lot of ways... I don't know, some of those hits in the head. I grew up skateboarding and I didn't wear a helmet ever, you know?
These streets out here, man.
Yeah, these fucking streets out here. Yeah. Mosh pits, getting fucking knocked out, fucking silly in a mosh pit somewhere. Just getting into random fights at places and just getting knocked the fuck out. One thing I noticed just about contact and just roughhousing, fighting and all that. That's how I got my nose boxing here. One thing I noticed about growing up fighting and just growing up damaged and getting a beating and shit like that is that it makes you a bit fearless, more so than most people. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people would flinch at shit and I'd be like, you know, smiling.
It moves the meter.
Oh, yeah. My blood pouring out of my nose and my mouth and I'm just like laughing like, oh, this is an element that I know of.
Yeah.
Was that something that you kind of experienced as you were going?
Oh, man. I mean, I remember growing up playing football. I'd be the only white kid on the team. We had an all black team. So we were playing good ball. And they used to teach us to hit with the top of your head.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, with the crowd. Yeah,
just turn it into a missile.
I would come home with the worst headaches. I remember for years, man. Brutal. Looking back, probably not the best. But that whole, that contact, even in lacrosse, like super violent. And I've always pushed into that. I have no problem with violence and like contact and getting punched and punching. I would definitely say it's moved the meter quite a bit. And then explosions and shit later, like just that totally accepting of powerful violence. It's not uncommon.
What road leads you into the military?
Yeah.
That's a wild change from getting ejected from a car on a freeway, running into a bunch of shit, not realizing the future is a real thing, not having a plan, and all of a sudden...
Yeah, I ran the no plan thing all the way to ground. So I ran it through college. I got kicked out of multiple schools, had to go live in my aunt and uncle's basement for a couple years and like reset and do in Boston. Long story short is...
Can you talk about that 2 years in Boston?
Reset? Yeah.
So you basically, nothing worked. So let me figure this shit out. So your Fortress of Solitude is a basement?
Well, I was dealing ecstasy. I was 19. I just turned 19.
Back when you could trust that shit.
Yeah, it was like the real shit, man.
Right now you get a pill and you're like...
This was the time. And I was like... It wasn't like I was a big druggie. I was just like all about like trying to get my money right. But I was going about it in all the wrong ways. And I was spending it as fast as I was making it. And so I was really just living, you know...
Day by day.
I mean, as close as you could... It was tight. And so long story short is I woke up one day, and it was in October 2004. And I remember it was raining, and I had this moment where I felt like everything was hollow and things were about to collapse. And I ended up leaving, and a bunch of people got arrested, and a lot of stuff happened after I left. I must have just had some, like...
So the spider sense.
That... I mean, God spoke to me or something, but that was the moment where I called my dad. I gave him all the drugs and money I had. I said, take everything. I'm walking out of this place. And I went and moved back east for a couple of years, worked landscaping, went back to nothing, had those bouts of loneliness and like, what am I doing here, man? I was some BMOC, and now I'm living in a basement freezing. But you know what? I trained Muay Thai. I was at Dorchester Muay Thai Academy for about a year and a half, and built my body back up, built my thing back up. And now I was like, okay, I want to go in the military, but I want to finish college. So I pieced together a junior college AA, and then I transferred to University of California, Santa Cruz, and finished up there barely. And that was that. And I stacked a lot of problems in between at Santa Cruz, which legal problems, drunken publics, nothing evil, but a lot of dumb meatball shit.
Yeah, man. Our inability to measure consequence, I guess, is at the... It's funny because when you mentioned that you knew some shit was up, that's probably your superhuman pattern recognition that comes from your ADHD, where you're like, some shit's probably about to happen. Let me fucking leave this place.
Yeah, and I'm willing to pivot, which I'm sure, Ed, you can identify with and why you're still here, is like some people will feel that and then not pivot.
Yeah,
they'll be like, well, I'll just wait a little bit longer. I'm all about, I'll fucking make a drastic decision.
They'll brace. Brace for impact. What they do.
Well, that's a good point.
Like some people will go into a crisis like that where like, hey, you know, a bunch of people are getting fucking grabbed.
Yeah.
This shit looks like it's not going to have, there's going to be problems. And instead of letting go.
Yeah, letting go. That's exactly what it is.
Because it's the only thing they know. So yeah. I get that some people won't worry about change, but just people, instead of running, they'll brace for impact.
It's that Zen proverb, let go or be dragged.
Yeah.
And I'm like totally okay with cutting away and being like that heat, man, be willing to walk away. I'm like, I'll walk away if I feel the walls closing in and I'm not scared to. Yeah. And that's been
which is both, in some cases, it's highly positive and amazing that you can do that. But in other ways, like you can walk away from that. What else can you walk away from? Some people just blanket, I can walk away from everything.
Yeah. And that's, you know, relationships stuff. It's like something I got to be cognizant of, that I'm like, first of all, I'll never give up. So there's like this competing thing of like ego and like, I'll never give up, versus when you got to understand and be realistic of the scenario. And that's the art.
Yeah.
That's an art.
Yeah. That's what doesn't fit in the round peg that doesn't go into this fucking square.
That's the hard part, I think, for everybody.
You're finishing up schooling, again, the military.
Yeah.
Like, where is that?
So that's where this comes up, is I realize, well, I'm done with school. Well, I guess the later is now, time to go in the military. And I go into the recruiter and they're like, dude, you're on probation. Dude, they're like, you have pending court cases. You're on probation.
Yeah, there's no way.
Dude, I'm like, oh,
and,
well.
And when you make the decision to go into, like I say the military yeah. for people listening, because you went somewhere specific.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
I wanted to be a SEAL since I was 7 years old.
Where did you see that from?
I saw some glow lights on the bay, San Diego Bay, and I was with my dad. And he goes, I go, what's that? And he goes, those are SEALs training in the bay. I know now they were like SQT students training in the bay. But I immediately went, you know, to Blockbuster back in, you know, and I was getting the Men with Green Faces and in the library when that was a thing on the Dewey Decimal System, you know, checking out all the military stuff from Vietnam and Special Force, Green Berets. But SEALs really spoke to me. And I was like, all right, I want to be a SEAL. But, all right, school, girls, like, you know, parties. But then I'm like, I have to go to college and because that's what people do. And, you know, mind you, people weren't paying for my shit. I was taking out loans, but I thought that that's what I was supposed to do. Long story short, I finish it up, have to go to jail because I'm on probation. I request the judge to, like, hey, can I go in the military? He's like, dude, you totally disregarded your probation. You got arrested multiple times. I'll let you go in for 180 days in Santa Cruz County. So I said, all right. Fuck it, let's do it. Let's rock and roll.
180 days.
Yeah, so I ended up getting 90. Oh, I ended up 120 and I served 90. But it was, you know, a lockdown facility, and I was in there with, you know, guys going to federal prison and waiting trials. And
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of our Patreon members for their generous support. It's the only way we can bring some of these amazing people behind the microphone and have some of these amazing Midnight of the Soul conversations for you guys. If you're not already a part of the Patreon community, please consider joining us. We have our giant online training catalog for you guys to have access to, as well as some exclusive Sneak Reaper Industries merch drops for you guys at the Dead Drop tier. I would also like to thank the company Sneak Reaper Industries, one of our main supporters and a company that provides some of the most amazing urbanware, survival specific, and cutlery out there. Your support not only makes this show possible, but also supports some of the charities that we run, including the Fighter's Kitchen out of Puerto Escondido, where we're supporting some up-and-coming fighters under the tutelage of Eddie Farrell. Thank you for your support, and again, please consider joining us on the Patreon. And now back to the show.
We had somebody here last week, JC, interesting dude, grew up in Chicago, got some shit with cartels in Mexico. Weird.
Dude, bro, I know what you're talking about.
JC. Oh,
dude, that's a real homie, man. He's legit.
He's a
beast.
He's a beast, but he's also a fucking amazing human being.
Yeah, he's dialed in, man. He's dialed into that divine path.
Forged. Seeing people like him in this kind of like life setting. Shit, I forgot where I was going with this.
I'd love to link with him sometime.
Great dude.
He was down here.
He was down here. What were we talking about? I fucking lost my train of thought. You were talking about, the prison. He said, like, if people, because there's a lot of shit glorifying prison culture now on TikTok and people speaking about prison in a glorified way. He's like if people want to know what that's like, grab your phone, put it in a drawer somewhere, take some water, and go into your bathroom and stay there for 2 days without going out.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. If people want to glorify that shit, just
he's been through it too, man. Mexican prison. Dude, he's gone through it. Dude, that dude's tough as shit.
When you're in there, in this, I mean, I've never been under those conditions.
Yeah, but you've seen it. You know what it is.
But for somebody like me who's fucking ADHD.
Yeah.
What does that do for you when you're put into a box for a bit?
Man, for me, I was like, in a weird way, I was like, okay, because I wasn't like going in there on some new charges.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was cleaning up some old stuff. So I always kind of felt, and I've gone to jail a few times since then, which we'll get into, but I'm like, okay, immediately let me get on a program, which is what I always still push now, is, okay, how do I just build my day efficiently so I feel good about myself? So that was like anytime I got into some level of incarceration.
How do you build yourself a day where you feel good about yourself at the end of it?
Yeah. So the first one is like, hey, set an early wake up time. Don't just like linger and sleep in. okay, read some, get a spiritual win, you know, read some scripture or something if that's your thing, or whatever anybody wants to do, get a reading win, get a physical win. So kind of stacking the wins like that, and then be cognizant about your food. That's the other piece, is don't stay away from pleasure. Try to stay as purpose-driven.
There's Oreo cookies there on the table, man.
Come on. And that's the thing, is it's like, yeah, you can, you know, but it's, it's like, oh, I just want to feel better. I'll just have
it. Yeah, I deserve it. I've been.
And then that negotiation. Try to stay away from negotiations and pleasure.
Is that where it kind of started?
I started to understand the importance of that regimentation, because I was like happy even there. And I had to learn that again in the Foreign Legion in a barracks room, you know. But I was like, man, if I can be happy here, fuck, man. Like, what about when I'm making money and like have a chick and a this and that and a life?
And outside.
Yeah.
So you spend your time there, and then after that, you step out of that.
I stepped out of that, and this CO asked me, he goes, hey, what are you going to do? I got out the day after Christmas, 2008. And he goes, what are you going to do? And I go, I'm going to be a Navy SEAL. And it's like midnight, right? He's letting me go, and he goes, like laughing. And I'm like, for me, because I have this delusional confidence, which has helped me in some capacities. But he goes, looking back, he was totally right to be laughing in my face. I'm walking out of jail, man. I'm 230 pounds. I had to lose some weight, too. He was like, dude, you're walking out of jail, bro. Like, and lo and behold, though, he was right. I had a lot of administrative hurdles to get over. A lot. Yeah, and a lot of, honestly, miracles to happen.
You step out of that prison, that motherfucker somewhere probably maybe already seen your story. You're listening to this like, oh, shit, he actually fucking did it. You step out of there, again, you have this clear, like you say delusional.
Yeah.
I don't know. I, for me, it's when I get focused on one thing, I figure it out.
Yeah.
Because that's a superpower we have. Yeah. Fucking ADHD, hyper-focus.
Yeah, you can get hyper-fixated on a goal.
And it's like a superpower and also a curse because you could.
A lot of other things start falling away.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you have to. You have to cut your toenails? That doesn't fucking do anything for my plans.
Yeah.
So you step out of there. You say you have to jump through a lot of administrative hurdles. Mm-hmm. Like what's barring you from running?
I was scared to be in Navy. I was scared to go to the Navy and ask, because it was like I was scared for them to just tell me no. I was scared to fail and be on a boat. I wanted to deploy with a gun. And so there was all these fears I had. So I was like, I'll go to the Marines first. And they said no because of my tattoos. So that was a no. And then the Army said no because of my background, criminal background. It wasn't like I had no felonies, but it was a lot of misdemeanors, like thick. And so they said no. And then I went to the Navy and kind of said a prayer, licked my wounds for about 3 days on my mom's couch, riding my bike around to the recruiter, like fucking loser, 23 years old. Going, man, and that the reality of all that was kind of starting to become clear to me. So I ride my bike down there. I give him a paper, like, here's the disposition of the cases. Everything's good. And it was all clear and paid. And he goes, yeah, we can work with this, man. And it was this solid cat. And then I started the process. I went through MEPS and all that.
I hadn't thought about that aspect of it. If you go into the Navy with this fucking dream of becoming a frogman and you don't make it, you're on a fucking boat.
You're chipping barnacles, man. Because you rolled the dice and you don't have a job. It's because you go undesignated into the Navy. So they have this like pipeline where they were getting all these SEAL recruits, high value candidates, and they wouldn't make it and they would wash out. And then you got all American guys from Notre Dame chipping fucking paint, dude. Yeah. Like that's what kept me going though, man. They would go, hey man, Hayes Grading underway. We'd be on the beach. Gallagher was out there. He's one of my instructors, man. Shout out to him. Solid cat. He was like, hey, you want to be out there, man? All right. Well, okay. It's a volunteer organization. You don't have to be here, right? You can go ahead.
Doors open.
Yeah, doors open.
Fuck. You're showing up there and you're like, this is what I want to do. These guys are the only, funny that the Marines are like.
Dude, they said no. They laughed at me. But they totally were like, no.
I know. For some reason, life has either blessed me or cursed me with having a shit ton of Marines around me. Like, for some reason, I have a lot of my friends are Marines.
Bro, I love Marines.
They're great, but man, having too many of them in your house for
an extended period of time.
Yeah, they'll break shit. It's funny that they like, no. So you go into, you have your chance with the Navy, and it's a fucking bullet and a gun spinning.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it.
Because that's Russian roulette, basically.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't make it, you're going to go into a job that you probably won't like, and you're stuck there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've asked this, I know of a few people that have gone through that process of getting ready for it, right? And everybody's, there's some fucking freaks of nature out there. They're like, what did you get to get ready? Oh, I just started eating better and just fucking run with boots in the sand. I have a friend of mine who did it, Buds, at 30. He had a medical waiver. But he's an alien, though. He doesn't count.
One of those.
He's one of those. On your end, what are you doing to get ready for this process?
Dude, I needed running because I was never a runner. And so running is my arch nemesis. It's for the enemy. So yeah. I'm like, okay, well, and so I got in the Naval Special Warfare, a SEAL motivator for the area. And I got with the group that was all guys trying to train for SEALs. And I would go down there and, work at Home Depot stacking boxes all night and then go train during the day and puking every day, man. I mean, I'm talking puking
this
every
day. You're not even going through it yet. I'm preparing.
I'm civilian working and I'm just preparing. And I still needed, because I had so many conduct waivers and tattoo waivers and all these things still, it was like I was not racked high. And so I had to keep showing up, keep taking tests, keep showing up, get letters of recommendation from active duty SEALs and work with them. And
how are you getting
it? It took me 8-9 months because I was training with active duty SEALs.
So you were like, hey, dude, look at me showing up and training and doing this shit. Can you
and so
please?
I knew I needed FaceTime. And that's why I say, guys, listen to this, man. Don't take no for an answer, man. You know how many people said, dude, there's no fucking way. Dude, you have a criminal badge. There's no way you're going to get a top secret clearance. There's no way you're going to make it through. You can't run, dude. I heard no, but that delusional clarity, right? That fucking, okay, yeah. Well, they're like, only 1% make it. I'm like, yeah, that's me. It's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Well, some 1%, well, who is it then?
Yeah,
if it's not me, then who the hell is it? But it wasn't like, I know I'm going to crush this. I approached it very cautiously.
Are some of those SEALs basically kind of mentoring some of the guys?
Yeah, it's their little TDY kind of duty. During that time, they're active duty, but they'll facilitate the physical screening test for guys trying to get a SEAL challenge contract. So you actually have a job, you're depth into the Navy, and then you can keep working. And if you can get a SEAL contract before your ship date, then you're going to ship on a SEAL contract. So it's like that direct pipeline.
When you're going through all this, are you reading books on how to get through it? Is it just what you're hearing from these
little
dudes?
Bit? Yeah. I was trying to get my hand. I was enveloped in it. I'd watch videos and stuff, and I was scared. I had fear, is my contract going to get approved? Am I going to get in? And then they're going to pull the rug out from under because they find out something.
Injury,
anything could happen.
Are you seeing that happen around you with some of the other candidates?
Well, they were training, yeah, definitely. And then when I shipped and gone in, it was the washout rate was crazy. You'd be there, and then by the time a year and a half later is how long it is. Yeah. You look around, you're like, man, where is everybody, man?
Yeah, I did not go through. Well, I went through a sort of pipeline myself, and I remember just having this moment where I'm in line, and I'd see all these fuckers around me. We're all fucking shaved,
Yeah.
They fucking made us shave skin.
Yeah.
What they said, I want you fuckers to get sunburns on your head. That's how fucking shaved they want you. Fucking how they had us. And I remember seeing this dude in front of me, solid motherfucker, made out of beef jerky. Just could see the muscle striations on him, And I'm like, fuck, man, look at that guy. I'm not gonna fucking do this shit. And then a week later, his spot is empty.
Yeah.
And then a week later, the other dude next to me who was showing me how to march in cadence.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know any of that shit. Because I didn't grow up in any sort of military school. I didn't have any experience like that. Who was showing me how to tie my boots. That guy was gone.
Yeah.
And the other dude over there who did 1,000 fucking push-ups, he's fucking gone.
Strange.
And I'm like, motherfucker. And then I realized that a lot of these guys were leaving because they didn't like to be yelled at. Well, this guy left over here because he didn't appreciate that all his shit was thrown into a swamp next to the dormitories. Because he fucked up on something. So, there's a bunch of people breaking character, I guess, for a bunch of bullshit. But in my mind, I'm like, these fuckers don't know that I'm into this type of shit, I guess. The glutton for pain aspect of it.
You're bringing up a good point, Ed, about that is it's your meter throughout your life had been moved because bad shit happened.
Yeah.
Right. And so these guys, I wonder, I go, what happened in their life to where they haven't had their tree shook enough times to where I'm like, they'd throw my shit out and I'm like, like, you know, there's nothing, there was no line. There was a decision that was made. You're like, all right, I'm going to do this. So it's like, when you're doing it, how do you communicate that to somebody? If somebody was going to ask you, like, what approach did you take into it?
I guess one of the things that somebody told me this shit, I wish I remember his name. He said, everything you're trying to avoid is going to happen anyway. Yeah. Like, all like of it. That. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Everything, what are you trying to avoid? I don't want my, like, I don't want my fucking shit to be tossed out. It's going to happen anyway. They're doing it to fuck with everybody here. It's going to happen anyway.
It's this acceptance of chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just an acceptance to it.
I'm afraid of this. I'm afraid of that. Hey, dude, nobody makes it out alive out of any of this shit.
Yeah. No, so one's, like, no one's unscathed.
Everything you're trying to avoid is going to happen anyway. So just fucking do it.
Yeah.
You're going through this program. You're just fucking getting ready for it. And, like, I've heard all sides. Like, again, all of us have grown up watching G.I. Jane. I think that's what, like,
yeah,
growing up, that's the only kind of, like, inkling I got about what that it was like, you know? I remember being a kid also, like, we'd cross into San Diego go to SeaWorld and shit like that, or go to Coronado, and we'd see those fucking guys on the beach, yeah, with those helmets, and I'd be like, what the fuck are these, yeah, fucking people doing? What's that like, getting the, like, you're into this filter.
Yeah.
You're not in, you're just into the, you're about to go into this grinder.
Yeah. And the, you know, getting to Bud's was an interesting piece because, you know, all the lead up, Bud's prep and stuff, it's a lot of, yeah, physical tests and rack and stack and your physical ability. But then when you get to Bud's, it's carnage. It's carnage daily. And you start dry, and then immediately you're wet, and then immediately, and you're not feeling good, and you're cold all the time. And so it's just, they're ripping your room apart. They're smashing your helmet. It's like just absolute carnage. People puking, and you're pissing your pants. There's no bathroom. Like, it's just absolute mayhem from sun up to sundown and into the evening, often, for months.
Will the individual survive that? Like, individual, being like, I am a unique individual, I'm going to fucking figure this shit out on my own.
If you were just there by yourself?
Like, the mentality, like, are you seeing people ganging together?
Yeah.
So are you seeing other fuckers just, like, being like, fuck it, I'm going to...
You can't do it solo. Those like minds start to attract. Like, yeah, you have the guys that are like, all right, this dude's solid. Hey, let's group up. We're all about the same height. Like, let's get in the same boat crew because, you know, everyone will lift their weight. But then you'll have these shit bags, you know, ducking the boat or ducking the log, taking their fingers off the log. And then that gets corrected by instructors fast, because if you're there like that, then what are they going to be like? Yeah. Overseas when there's nobody watching.
And is there any internal correcting going on between
you? Oh, yeah. Oh, it's
are you screaming at each other like, fucking, oh, yeah, blow the, it's fucking mayhem, wear your,
yeah,
weight.
I mean, it only happens once or twice, and then it gets real corrected because people aren't just going to stand around and have that happen.
Do any of these instructors have an inkling about your history as you're going through it? Are they using any of that against you?
I mean, sometimes they'll read into it a little bit, but you're, especially in the early phases, they don't give a shit. Because there's so many guys washing out, they're like, who's actually going to be here post-Hell Week? And then we're going to start kind of seeing who they are as people. So a little bit. Not much, but a little bit.
Some people go through it once. Some, yeah, people go through it twice.
Yeah.
Some people go through it a shit ton of times.
Yep.
How many times do you go through it?
Man, I was one of the originals, made it through front to back, no fails, no rolls, no injuries, nothing. I did it as fast as you could do it, all the way through. But, and some of that's luck, no injuries, but I also prepared well. You know, and so it's some genetic bone density and I was careful, right? I was fucking not reckless with, you know, doing the obstacle course.
Because you already had been reckless most of your life. So
I knew I had one go at, like, for real. I had, like, the motivation and momentum to do it once. I knew I couldn't get rolled. I knew I couldn't, like, have the 6-week stagnation and roll to a different class. I didn't have that in me. So it really kept, I knew that was going to be a death sentence. I knew it was going to be a death sentence for me if I was going to lose any fitness, because I wasn't, like, the best athlete. I'm, like, pretty good at everything, good swimmer, good, but I'm a terrible runner. And so if I was losing any fitness, man, I passed every run by like 10 seconds, dead serious, all the way through, man, like 10 seconds with some guys helping me, you know, and then I would help them on the swims because I can swim. But that was, you know, so I had to really put out for a lot of evolutions.
What's that? How does it feel when you, it's a filter though. It's not, that's not even the start of, that's just a, it's just a filter.
Yeah. It's just a filter. And they take your trident. I mean, you're not even a SEAL yet. You know, they're just getting you to the team. And then you got a whole nother of like, okay, now what's this guy's aptitude?
What's the feeling of it when you just pass that filter though? Like, what are you feeling?
It was probably one of the best days of my life because I remembered the first time, you know, I remembered back walking into the recruiting office, you know, that feeling. And then standing there, I get the chills, standing there, you know, 2 years later, well, 2 years later with a SEAL, as a SEAL, like, yeah. And then, because then being able to verify my mentality, like now I finally had something, like I walk, I'm like, I knew I had it in me. Now I got proof that I got at least something to touch. Yeah. That was a good feeling.
You go through that. Substances and shit like that are probably still around, yeah?
Yeah, I was so locked on, man. I mean, I had like one bad drinking night, which could have got, because you get an alcohol-related incident, you're fucked. Yeah, like one fight or whatever. So I was so focused. I mean, I was staying locked the fuck on. And, you know, I drank a couple times. One time we almost got kind of in trouble, but.
For me, it was like the, I would get away from it.
Yeah.
But I would visit it for one night, yeah. And it was like, yeah. There was a donkey in the hotel room, yeah. You know, there's like you wake up and like, dude, where's my car?
Yeah.
That type of shit. Yeah. That's because that's the only way I knew how to drink.
Myself. Yeah, me too.
So I remember just being, when I went through my shit, I was just nervous about fucking it up because yeah. That's a fuck up. That's how I self-sabotage.
Well said.
You go through this process, you go through this filter, now you really have to like perform. That now it's training.
And I felt walking into my locker at Team 7, so I went to SEAL Team 7, walking in and I saw my name on my locker, you got a big cage with your gear, and I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're really locking on. And man, I was there early, I was volunteering for schools, I was so happy.
What were you focusing on in your training? Like everybody, people go into
different focuses, specialties. Yeah.
They have an amazing fucking sniper program in the SEALs. Some people go into like I don't know. There's like I've met people that are in the canine programs. Mm-hmm. Like this is just a myriad of specialties. Like, do you have any sort of like, hey, this is what I want to do?
Yeah. So I got in, and my first thing was, all right, I'll volunteer whatever the team platoon needs me. So they were like, hey, we got a communication spot open. I was like, cool, I'll volunteer. Went and did that. Then they came back and they have a JTAC spot, Joint Terminal Attack Controller, coordination of fires from the aircraft. Went to that school. That was really badass, up at the Top Gun school up in Fallon. Then I came back and they sent me to sniper school. So I'm a sniper, JTAC, comms, and then I did some advent laden stuff, which is like low visibility operations, that type of stuff, interrogations, getting quite all those, vetting. And that I did well in those, and those are pretty much my qualifications.
Where's all the water sports? Where's the training in the water?
Man, I did Hearst cast, so we did, you know, casting in the water. And
but realistically, this is like moment in the SEALs history where it's kind of like basically trying to...
desert.
Yeah, we're trying to envelop. You're trying to envelop a lot more in your.
You know, I almost the closest I ever came to dying was actually off the coast of Cabo, doing for the G20 summit some of the presidential shit, and I almost drowned. That was pretty crazy, but not a lot of marine operations. We obviously would train for it, visit board search and seizure and all those things. But man, most of the stuff was on land. I deployed to Yemen and Iraq.
This is war on terror territory. Yeah, so like
I was in Yemen and Iraq, and that was, there ain't no water out there, bro.
Those were your first deployments.
Yeah.